episode of Does Your Favorite Movie Suck, where we revisit great movies from the 80s and 90s that actually might suck.
God, that was a good one.
My name is Kalen Egan.
My name is Travis Sintel. I'm excited to be here.
Well, you know what? I'm bringing it at a new level today because, according to a certain metric, last week's episode was our most popular episode ever.
Woo!
Don't ask me what metric that is.
We have a hard time with metrics in the world of podcasting. I think everyone does. But if you're listening, thank you.
That's Travis is convinced it's all fake numbers anyway.
I am convinced it's fake news.
But you know what? We didn't talk about this, and I don't know why we didn't. Here's what happened. Travis went on a radio show.
I did.
And he promoted this show. And
kind of shamelessly.
Boy, did the listeners roll in.
If you came here from the Stephanie Miller Show, thank you, first of all.
Yes.
And I
was getting to that.
We do talk politics here occasionally and relate them to pop culture and film. So you're in the right place. Please stick around. Not every episode has that. This one probably won't. But we do indulge ourselves in those areas.
Well, and the timing is kind of awesome for new listeners because of our other piece of news, old business that must be covered, which is that, you know, we've made a big deal about because what are we going to do? Pay like $300 for space? So we had to keep deleting old episodes as our show rolled on. And so we lost like 20 or 22 episodes or something from the very beginning of the show, including the very first episode. And then I found out that I could just click a button and for, hear me out, 4 cents, I could upgrade to a way huger server.
Turns out, guys, it helps to Google things. We didn't know, but
not
now
even
we know.
Just Google. Just to like click one button on the site I go to almost every day for this dumb podcast.
Anyway, so
now we have a giant, we have all this space, so I'm going to put, so here's the thing. I'm going to put every single episode that we've ever done back up so that the whole show will be available, but the shitty part of that is, and I'm going to wait to do that until this episode goes out, because in order to do that, I think that it's going to show up as new episodes, and if there's a way not to do that, you know, I'll try, but I don't think there is. So it's going to look like there are 22 new episodes of Does Your Favorite Movie Suck, but they're all just old episodes. So once they're up, I'm going to reorganize the whole thing. It's going to be fine, but you're just going to have to deal with this avalanche of old
shit. That being said, re-listen to all of them, please.
You know what? If you're new, sure, but I listened to one because of this, like from the old days. We didn't have our groove, baby. We did not have our groove.
Now we have it.
Now we got it. Just in time for our Cruel Intentions.
That's great. So I have not seen this film.
Okay.
I have seen Dangerous Liaisons.
Yeah.
So I have some familiarity with the context. And I have an angle of things I'd like to talk about, but I'd like to hear your experience with the film.
Nearly nothing. Nearly nothing. This is a 1999 movie. I'm going to say my sister likes it. My sister recommended it for this show. And in fact, on the back of the little slip that we pulled out of the bag, it says her name because she was like, you got to do this. And I hadn't even put it in. That's how off my radar it was.
Yeah.
Not even in this massive brainstorm that I think to include Cruel Intentions. And her angle on it is, it's so bad. It's so bad.
Well, great,
but she kind of loves it. But she loves it. Look, there's space for what people consider bad movies.
I'm excited about it. I'm not even joking. I it's a movie I am fine watching. I think it's pretty short. It's I which is why that's the best thing I can say about it.
It's pretty short.
It's pretty short. So what's the big deal, guys? I am interested in the cultural movement. So 10 Things I Hate About You.
That's what I was gonna say.
Yeah.
This is coming. What I think Cruel Intentions is. Is catching the wave of Kevin Williamson, who did Scream and
Dawson's Creek.
Yep. And this seems to be, and this is, I think, is another 99 movie, which we've done a ton of lately. Mm-hmm. But I think that this comes right in the thick of that, or maybe even near, like, a little later than, you know, in the late side of that wave. And what I remember that, and She's All That has that shit going on too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I remember that time for sure, and it was interesting to me. And I did watch like a bunch of Dawson's Creek and shit, like, and I liked Scream when it came out. But somehow when this came out, I was like, no, I don't need that. I'm not really that into that.
There's something here that we should tease out, and not necessarily in the front end, but maybe in the back end, about nostalgia, the nostalgia angle on repurposing old stories for modern times.
Big time,
right?
Yeah.
So there's some. So for those of you new to the podcast, we do absolutely. We can name a bunch of these movies do this. I think around this time, and it's very interesting. And so new listeners to the podcast, nostalgia is our angle into these things. We want to talk about what our experiences were watching them for the first time 20, 30 years ago versus watching them now and seeing how culture has changed, or more importantly, how we have changed in relation to the film. So that's kind of our angle coming in, and I think that this offers an interesting idea. The idea of repurposing old narratives that are sort of inherent in our culture, whether they be 10 Things I Hate About You in terms of Shakespeare or Dangerous Liaisons, which is Cruel Intentions is a remake or a modernization of Dangerous Liaisons.
You know what the other thing I like about this genre is?
I don't.
Sexy high school. The sexy high school genre is something that I don't think is serviced enough, and I'm just going to go ahead and say it.
I don't like the word serviced in that sentence.
We write them.
Jesus.
I just mean that, like, I think it's a very it's a fun and cool genre, and we've written a couple of things set in high school.
Yeah, but not sexy high school dramas.
One of the things we wrote was pretty sexy.
Yeah, it's true.
And it was, like, just post-high school. But but there was a time I remember that.
Guys, we're legitimate writers. I just want to reiterate that to listeners, that we deal in legitimate
I mean, the thing we wrote is called Sexy High School. I mean, we just have to put it out there.
Yeah. Oh, doesn't matter.
It's not called that. But I like it because – And that is the Clueless and O genre, is like, let's take these adult stories and throw them into a high school youth context. I don't really know why that's cool or that people like to do that, except that there's a long tradition of kind of, you know, melodrama in teen stories.
Yes,
and the other thing about it that I think is fun, and I'm not trying not to be. I mean, I'm being a little bit pervy on purpose for fun, but like,
in reality,
what I like about this genre is that everyone looks 25. And I mean, that's a joke, you know, applied to like Beverly Hills and Dawson's Creek and whatever else. But this movie, for sure, it's like Ryan Phillippe looks way older than high school.
Yeah.
And so who else is Selma Blair, Reese Witherspoon,
Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Yeah. Yeah.
The dream team. I mean, this is the dream
team.
That's
a solid bunch.
Yeah, it's a solid bunch. I never quite understood Ryan Phillippe as a person. The other actors and actresses, I kind of get.
He's got some weird accent.
He's a weird guy. So I am interested to see this.
But Dangerous Liaisons is a sexy, like, hot melodrama.
Here's what I think.
Right?
Yes, but here's what I think you clued into, and I think this is important, is that melodrama is the right word for it. When there are broad characters doing broad emotional things, and there's backstabbing, and there's emotional connections, and people are riled up about things, which is a lot of Shakespeare and a lot of, you know, sort of surrounding material, it makes so much sense to put it in high school when everything matters and emotions are huge and things are bigger than life. And so it's an obvious thing, and I think it's really a smart thing in a lot of ways.
It's an easy way for the culture to understand, a contemporary modern culture to understand that kind of melodrama. It just puts it in a context where it suddenly makes sense again. It's hard to do Dangerous Liaisons. Like, let's pretend you did contemporary Dangerous Liaisons with adults.
Mm-hmm.
It's straight up camp.
Yeah, it's hard.
Straight camp.
Yeah.
And in teens, it's kind of campy in a certain way, but like, I think you can just get away with
it. It's a different kind of camp.
Yeah.
Yeah. I totally agree with you. So I've not seen O. I saw 10 Things I Hate About, or is that right?
Yeah.
I saw that. I saw a couple episodes. Dawson's Creek is kind of a separate
Clueless
thing.
Also.
Yeah, I've seen Clueless. So I have sort of mild... I'm mildly conversant with this genre.
Yep.
This is one that for sure I was not interested in seeing
right.
then, but I really legitimately am interested in seeing it now. And I woke up this morning and I thought, I'm kind of into seeing Cruel Intentions today.
Why not?
Because it's one of those movies I would say most of my friends have seen. No one wants to go back and rewatch that. So there's never right. going to be an opportunity for me to see this movie except under the auspices of this podcast. Like, that's it.
I completely agree with you. I'd never have watched this in the rest of my days. The other cool thing about Cruel Intentions, just that occurs to me right now, Dangerous Liaisons, that's a really awesome title. Cruel Intentions is a really awesome title.
Yeah.
Those are really good titles, and it's really cool that they found something that's as good without being Dangerous Liaisons.
You're so right.
I think it's a dope title.
Is in Gossip Town, let me take a trip to Gossip Town for a second.
Okay.
Is this where Sarah Michelle Gellar and Ryan Phillippe, no, not sorry, it was Reese Witherspoon and Ryan Phillippe who had a marriage, right? Wasn't he married to one of those girls? We're stepping outside of our comfort zone.
When you say that, it sounds very plausible.
Okay, cool. All right, that's all I have to say about it. I don't really know if it's true or not. And
stick around for more hot gossip as we watch Cruel Intentions.
About that little wager of yours. Count me in.
What are the terms?
If I win, then that hot little car of yours is mine.
And if I win?
I'll give you something you've been obsessing about ever since our parents got married.
Be more specific.
In English, I'll fuck your brains out.
What makes you think I'd go for that bet? That's a 1956 Jaguar Roadster.
Because I'm the only person you can't have and it kills you.
No way.
You can put it anywhere.
Dallas, you watched the last 10 minutes of Cruel Intentions. What did you think of that movie? Yeah. He thought Dallas. He's yeah. like Groot.
Yeah.
Want to try again? No, you don't want to talk. Okay, let's go, bud. All right, see you guys.
Well, it's a very harrowing last 10 minutes.
So I know.
He's probably rattled emotionally. By
well,
that.
That's why he thought it was so good.
Yeah. Do you think? this is to dive into the deep end here. Do you think Dallas was? Do you think Dallas felt sorry for Ryan Phillippe?
I think that he, like me, was confused that he was dead. And
spoiler, guys.
Yeah, he probably felt bad.
Okay.
I mean, he saw a guy get hit by a car after throwing haymaker after haymaker.
Yeah. we'll get into all of that. That stunt, I thought the car smash was pretty good.
It was very good.
It was well done. It's Dallas, a lot of flailing limbs and, like, limp
joints. Oh, yeah, it looked joints. Good. Yeah. Looked really good. Dallas, are you – although, can I just say, I like the way that in order to save Reese Witherspoon, he pushes her further into traffic.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is awesome.
A lot of problems.
Are you going to go take a shower, Dallas? Are you going to go take a shower? Can you please go take a shower? No, go on. Bye.
Does your favorite movie suck, where we talk to silent babies?
See ya.
Podcasting at its finest. Why don't you give us a quick plot summary, Kalen? I bet you can do it quickly.
Okay.
I bet you can.
Here's what happens in Cruel Intentions. Here's what you should do. Go listen to the plot synopsis we already did for She's All That,
mm-hmm.
and you're done.
Oh, Kalen, no. But add stepsisters, lots of hand jobs.
Yeah, we had a
diary.
We had a conversation about this. We watched this separately, and I asked Travis if it was rated R or PG-13, and he couldn't immediately tell me because
yeah.
he had seen the film and I hadn't. I mean, yet. And then I watched it. Of course, it's R. It's a pretty soft R, but it's totally R because they talk about fucking all the time, and you can't use fuck as a verb and not get an R. You get one, right? You get one.
Yeah, you get one.
But they
how many
a lot.
Are there? They do say a
plenty.
Lot.
She says, fuck your brains out or whatever.
Yeah, that's the one I remember.
That's an immediate R.
Why not go for it then?
I don't know. I find that very curious.
That's the part that confused me. I thought if you're going to go R in a movie that's melodramatically camp about sexuality, then
that and that
something
feels
in.
Extremely 90s to me. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the difference, especially between 80s and 90s. What do we say? Sexy high school?
Sexy high school.
It's the difference between 80s sexy high school and 90s sexy high school, which is like 90s, for some reason, created this arbitrary line, which Kevin Williamson basically adhered to, which is like, you know, basically sexually active and very talkative characters who you never see get into it. But yeah. like I was thinking of like Risky Business and all this stuff from the 80s where like there is sex aplenty.
Well, we
in
did
those
Fast
moments.
Times at Ridgemont High. Also, which
yeah, exactly.
But there is qualify. A sex scene in it's this different. Film, but yeah. it's shot as if it's like the most romantic sort of textbook romance novel cover
I know,
ever.
Which is, it was so weird after all this chatter about, you know, they touched the fucking Travis. The bet that they make is Sarah Michelle Gellar telling Ryan Phillippe he can fuck her anywhere.
Yeah.
She's like,
well,
you can put
she
it
said
any-
put
you
it
can
anywhere.
Put it anywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not a lot of debate about what she meant.
No, but it's not the word fuck. So I was like, well, if you're going to do it, go for it. And you didn't really go for it. So maybe it's a really hard
because
PG-13.
They're not going. I get your thinking.
Yeah.
That actually makes sense.
Yeah.
All right. So
it's the kind of movie that would go for it, I thought.
I was surprised. Watching it, that was the thing that surprised me the most. Is that this came, you know, the other movie I think of from the only movie I think of is like big budget 90s sleaze, which I love. I mean, not as a genre necessarily, but is, well, I guess there's Showgirls, mm-hmm. but there's also Wild Things, which, and I think Wild Things is so awesome. I think Showgirls is so awesome too, but Wild Things is great. And I was surprised that this movie was tamer than Wild Things because Wild Things is also weirdly
much
tame.
Much tamer.
Weirdly tame.
Yeah. No, but this movie much
tamer. Yes,
this
movie is far tamer. Yes. And I'm like, why? I thought the same thing as you, which is like, why is this rated
I R? Prefer Wild Things, but I was very curious about the film. Like this movie, you know what it is? It felt like little kids playing dress up.
Totally.
So there's something really cool about that to me because they're all obviously in their 20s and they're like, but they're acting like high school kids who are acting like college kids.
Yeah,
it's old people acting like high school kids who are acting like college kids.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. That's exactly it. Yeah. And when I know that we talked about it, so I knew I was right. But I was watching the movie for the first 30 minutes, maybe even 45, and I was totally confused about what grade they were in or how old they were.
It's impossible. Well,
I was totally confused.
But because you had set it up that way, it made so much sense to me. And it is that genre of films like 10 Things I Hate About You and Oh, and it's because it's melodrama, it's playing at things
right.
as much as it's playing things.
Totally not in high school.
No.
Like, which it's, so here's the thing. I'll do the plot. I'll do it right now. But but just before that, the context setting is, these are high school students during the summer, just before, I guess, their senior year.
Yeah, before senior year.
So they're just hanging out and going, driving around and doing whatever they want by themselves, basically, without any, like, friend group. So they really just seem like little adults. It's a very strange time to set a high school story because nothing they do has any resemblance to what a high school student does. Mm-mm. At all. So you're watching this movie and you're like, what? Where? Who are they? How old are they? Why do they still live with their parents?
They're
where
ageless.
Are their parents?
They're, well,
like, it's very confusing.
The only person who is, everyone's sort of ageless and timeless. They could be between 16 and 30, I guess, most of them. They're all in their 20s when they play this, except for the oldest actress, Selma Blair, during the filming of this movie is 27. And she's playing, I guess, a 13-year-old, you know, like she's playing this like crazy, you know, aged down baby with pigtails who's pouts and is confused by everything.
Did I miss it? Is there a context for that? Like, what's up with her? Why? I mean, my sister had warned me about this. She said Selma Blair is acting so weird.
Yeah, she's acting. Well,
and then I saw the movie and I was like, that doesn't even begin to describe it. Like,
everyone's play acting. So Ryan Phillippe is acting like he's Christian Bale in American Psycho.
Right.
And Selma Blair is acting like she had some sort of concussion where she regressed 10 years.
I'm serious.
No, same.
Yeah.
Same. She's playing a developmentally delayed child.
Yes.
Man, woman child thing.
Who doesn't, like, her whole character. Hold on. Let's just do the story.
Let me say one thing about it, about Selma Blair, is that this will indicate to you her character, is that she's always pouting and confused, and she has never kissed a boy, and at one point, Ryan Phillippe seduces her, and it, you know, makes her promise to give him a kiss, and then she, like, puckers up her mouth in this weird way. He's like, no, I want to kiss you down here, and she's, like, way confused by that idea. And I thought, you surround yourself with all these people, you're in high school, and you don't understand what he's talking about.
Well, there, everything about her. We should just talk about Selma Blair now. I guess we're gonna do that.
All right.
So another thing she does, and then he does go down on her,
and she doesn't
and
understand
she's
that
like,
either.
She's like, I don't know what happened. It was really weird, and then it was kind of good, and then she says like she felt like an explosion, and she's like, but she does, and she's like, and then Sarah Michelle Gellar has to tell her that was an orgasm, and she's like, it was. Yeah. She is developmentally disabled, yeah. And it's very, very weird.
Well, also and then this problematic other thing in the scene I'm describing, because he gets her drunk. Here's the thing. She doesn't know what alcohol tastes like, because she goes, this iced tea tastes weird. And he goes, it's from Long Island, as if she does not taste alcohol. So he has a hammered, developmentally delayed woman in his bedroom, and he basically assaults her.
Yeah.
Which is really problematic.
But I mean, we're saying she's not supposed to be developmentally delayed.
Is she not?
I don't know. Because the other thing I was going to say, I mean, I assume not, because that is far too crazy to try to reason out how they got there. But I think she's just supposed to be innocent. And so there's another scene where she's like, I didn't even really get the setup for this. She's trying to seduce her cello instructor or whatever. And he's into it. He wants to be seduced. And he has been writing her love letters. I don't know. I was not tracking this. But what she does at Sarah Michelle Gellar's suggestion is try to seduce him. And so she stands on her head in a short plaid, like schoolgirl skirt, spreads her legs 6 inches from his face with the skirt presumably hanging down. And he's like staring at her doing this. And she doesn't mean it sexy. She's just like showing him she can do a headstand. Mm-hmm. So the movie has this really warped point of view, which is like this fantasy, stupid idiot girl who doesn't know she's so hot, who just does shit like this because she's a child. But then you also can pretty easily trick her into fucking you.
Yeah.
That's kind of the gag.
That's
of the movie.
The fantasy of that character.
But the character is so demented that I'm like, whose fantasy is this?
Also, the guy who plays the cello instructor, I'm always interested in, and we'll get to the plot here in a second, because I think this, we're segueing towards it, but I'm always interested in constant tonality. And if this thing hits its mark across the board, it's this really interesting piece of melodrama that I would be very happy existed and be happy to talk about it. I'll be honest with you, it's not a great film, but there are lots of things in it that I find really interesting to talk about. But there's this one character, I would argue, who is like doing a pretty good performance and being pretty normal and acting motivated more or less, except for liking Selma Blair.
That guy's
a pretty good guy.
Yeah, he's pretty good, but he's made a critical error by trying to be a real person. Like, it really sticks out.
It sticks out hugely because he's giving a very nice, nuanced performance. He's acting like a real person and reacting as a real person would. And Kaelin's right. It sticks way out.
Yeah, yeah.
So in terms of constant tonality, there's one guy doing a different thing.
Yeah, it's very strange. And I thought actually the very same thing. And it made me appreciate not necessarily what Selma Blair is doing, but what that Reese Witherspoon, Ryan Phillippe, and Sarah Michelle Gellar are on the same page. They are making the same movie.
Yeah.
Selma Blair, I don't know what her deal is. I don't know who told her to do that. And then this guy, poor this guy, is like,
give it a real
we're making a movie here, guys. Like, give it everything. And they're like, no, no, no.
Yeah, you don't know what we're doing.
So the story, okay, so here's the thing. So the story is, I don't want to turn this into The Rock, where I don't want to do every scene from the film, but the first scene is pretty critical. It's not plot related, but this sets the tone for the movie, which was very baffling. So it's Ryan Phillippe in therapy, and he's talking to his therapist, and she is like, and he's acting all hurt or like angsty. You know, he doesn't know what to do about something. And he says that, you know, she's been so helpful and she gives him her book and stuff, and he's all excited about it. But he's also acting weird. Like, you know, he's not being normal. You know, he's being either manipulative or really dumb, and you don't really know which. And then the gag reveal of it all is he's like, you can tell that the therapist also is sort of cheating him or bilking him out of money because he's rich. And so you get all this weird sort of context and you're like, okay, I don't really know what's going on. And then he leaves the therapist's office and he starts like walking cool. And you're like, oh, fuck, this guy's actually cool.
Yeah.
And then not a dork. And then she gets a call from her daughter right then, actually before he even leaves.
Well, Kaelin's also leaving out that he tries hard to seduce the
therapist. He says to the therapist, you know, you have beautiful legs. I'd love to photograph you.
And you're still a beautiful woman.
And the therapist is like, oh, boy, no thanks. Get out of here. And he also notes a picture of her daughter. And he's like, oh, she's really beautiful. I wish I could be with a girl like that. And the therapist is like, oh, she's a little out of your league. And it's like, just nonsense. And then he leaves and he starts walking all cool. And he's in a mall. Like, somehow this is a therapy office in a mall.
Don't get into
that. So then the therapist answers the phone, and it's her daughter weeping.
A young Tara Reid.
Tara Reid, in fact. And she's just crying so distraught because we discover, as the therapist does, before all of this, Ryan Phillippe had convinced her to take a bunch of naked photos and I guess had sex with her, probably.
Probably.
And then he plastered the internet, the early days internet, with like Dr. HTML, naked like... photos of her that say, like, I'm a slut.
Well, he
I'm
took,
a slut.
No, he took the cover of the book and changed the title.
Of the therapist book.
And then put, instead of her picture, Tara Reid's naked picture on it.
Which, and then said, I'm a slut. Yeah. Like, slut, change the book arrow, title. Slut, slut. Yeah. And then the therapist is so mad, mostly because he got the better of her.
Oh, he got her so good.
He got her.
He put her naked daughter's, you know, underage like, naked daughter's picture on the internet, so he got her really good.
And then, like, so then you're like, I was really struggling with this because I was like, the movie is telling you, and the way that then like the music kicks in is like, got here her. He is, it's our hero. But it also speak to is this. Like, he's a little bit bad.
Well,
you know?
This is the thing I want to speak to just up top before he does the the plot, because this will come up again and again and again. I just want to flag this here, that a movie where two hyper-intelligent, rich, moral-less people
right.
manipulate the people around them could be very interesting
Absolutely.
And awesome. But these people are very, very bad at manipulating people, and the stuff that they do is ham-fisted and mostly dumb, I would argue. And so the joy that you would get, the extra joy you get some joy out of seeing that, but the joy that you would get out of the cleverness with which they pull the puppet strings of people around them, this movie's a little weirdly devoid of that, in my opinion.
I completely agree. And what you don't get, I'm drawing this scenario out in order to explain it, and hopefully it's making sense, is like, I know the movie's called Cruel Intentions, but this is complicated. They are codeless. They have no design or consistency of interest. They're not wrecking balls. Like, they act like surgical puppeteers.
That's right.
Who are doing things,
but they're not that good at it.
Their reveals and their like moves are super stupid and super, like, again, I know the title, but they're just mean.
Yeah.
Like, there's no, they don't have any design other than just being really mean.
And the only reason I bring that up is not because the movie has to do that. I would argue the movie wants to do that and can't do it. So
yeah.
I think it's a lack of creativity or writing ability at this point, because this kind of movie is purporting to and wants to have those things happen, but doesn't understand people well enough to make them happen.
And it's not black comedy enough. Like it turns so hard into sincere Ooh. Earnestness, which is like such a strange tone to try to shift to after what we've done, after what we've seen. But like, this guy, it's not like he doesn't like learn. The fun would be, you can't teach an evil guy, you know, to be a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
That would basically, you would sort of see that. You would sort of understand that you would sort of delight in how utterly vicious and nasty they are. But it doesn't give you that. So it's a very, it's hard to understand who your protagonist is and what you're rooting for and what you are intended to even like guiltily like about
until
them.
The end when it tries to root you very hard in
a oh my god
specific
and,
point of view.
Well, what's amazing about the ending, and I thought this while I was watching it just now, is it reveals, if you had any doubt, it reveals without the shadow of a doubt that this movie's primary agenda is misogyny.
That's right. Well, let's get to it. Okay, so Ryan Phillippe comes home. He is the stepbrother. His name's Sebastian. He's a stepbrother of Sarah Michelle Gellar, both of whom are rich, sort of sexualized, you know, oversexed teens about to enter the senior year of high school. They're both very, very manipulative. They both think they're very clever, and they both have a lot of conquests. She over men, he over women. But importantly, they have never conquested each other before.
Right.
And they make a bet because he's been conquesting everybody. And I'm not going to say conquering. I'm going to say conquesting.
Conquesting.
Well, it makes sense for this film, I think. Yeah. And he says that none of them have been challenges. Here's a challenge. And he opens 17 magazine with Jennifer Love Hewitt on the cover, oddly. And there's an article by...
I found that confusing, too.
Yeah, really weird.
Was that an in-joke?
Yes, but really a weird, ill-placed one.
Strange.
And on page 60... I want to say 69. That seems too obvious, but I think it actually was. There's an article by Reese Witherspoon's character about why I'm going to stay a virgin. And he's like, this is the girl. And she's like, well, she lives in Iowa. Good luck with that. And he goes, well, oddly enough, you'd say that because her father's the new headmaster and she's moving in with my aunt, who I'll also be staying with. So Sarah yeah. Michelle Gellar goes, all right, I'll bet you can't do it. And here's the bet. And this sets up the movie. I'll turn this back over to you.
It's the worst bet.
She goes, okay, if you fuck her, then I get, if you don't fuck her, I get your sweet ass car you've been driving around it with in for the first 20 minutes of the film. And if you do fuck her, then you get to fuck me and you can put it anywhere you want.
Yeah. And then the stakes of the bet are bizarre because what does she care about this car? And what you discover is that they're not that weird because all she wants to do is fuck him.
Yeah.
And she gets really mad when he won't fuck her. I mean, now I'm jumping way ahead. But, like, so trying to backtrack is, like, all she wanted was to fuck this guy but also make him want her, I guess.
Well, she wanted to fuck him under her terms, which is I'm the bet to be won. Like, I'll win the bet.
I just don't get – I don't understand that motivation. Like, I don't understand why that is – why she needed to set up those parameters in order – like, specifically.
I think it's okay. She's the prize is part of it. And the other half of it is she wants to take something that he really loves, which is his car. It's the only thing he cares about is his car.
Bizarre.
Yeah. It's not good.
So
he
then
–
so then – but then – I mean, you've left it off at a point where I don't know how much more work we have to do. Because then he goes and the movie is him trying to – seduce Reese Witherspoon, who is resistant but like also not very resistant. Like, she kind of starts caving right away
in a very weird way. This is a woman who we're told, the movie tells us, is moral and interesting and intelligent. She writes this article that gets published, has a very clear sense of herself and her morals. And this guy comes in who is in no way clever, charming, anything.
There's a part where this is a good example. He convinces her to take a swim with him through ridiculous circumstances. And she agrees. And so she goes to her room to get her swimsuit on. And she comes back out and he's standing completely naked and facing away from her. And she's like staring because, like, whoa, Ryan Phillippe's pretty hot. Then he turns, faces directly at her and says, would you mind turning around while I can put my swimsuit on? And she's like, oh my God, of course, of course. And so she turns around, and then you hear him jump in the pool, and then she gets in the pool. Then her next line is, it's hard to believe somebody so charming could be manipulative.
Uh-huh.
And I was so confused, because I was like, is she talking about him being naked right there and then getting her in a pool? No, that's not what she's talking about. She's talking about the fact that she received a letter ages ago warning her about this guy's manipulations.
Yeah.
In this moment, all she's thinking is, my, how charming. That's it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me?
That's the thing, is the movie understands what it ought to be but can't figure out how to be that thing.
It's so weird.
Like, there's a version of this film with a more charming lead actor who actually could – Ryan Phillippe's always a dead-eyed zombie the entire film. That's his version of playing it. If he could turn on a spark of being charming or interesting – what a interesting film.
It made it – I'm serious. It's confusing every time he does something that is out of character. I was confused because I had no idea at all whether he was being manipulative or sincere.
Yeah.
No idea. Okay. And you only find out based on how the other characters react, like scenes later. And you're like, oh, he was for real.
Yeah.
I guess. Yeah. Like, there's this other crazy I mean, here's the whole movie. It's them doing these seduction scenes mixed with Selma Blair acting like a child and whatever. And so then another scene is they're in, do you remember this scene where they're in a car? This is supposed to be – this is the scene in the movie where the bad guy turns – you see the humanity. And you see him cracking under the seduction of this girl.
I'm so happy you brought this scene up because I wanted to talk about it so badly. Because just to preface what he's going to say, this is a turning point for Ryan Phillippe's character in terms of Reese Witherspoon.
And I mean, the question is, and it's hard to explain unless you've seen the film, how long before you understood that's what that was supposed to be? Because for me, it was many scenes later.
Agreed.
Where I finally was like, what?
Agreed.
So here's the scene, is they're driving in his cool car and I forget where they're coming from, but
doesn't matter.
He's driving and she's like she's messing with him, and she starts making like devil faces at him, witch faces. Yeah. And he's like, he like looks over at her, sort of half smiles, and is like, stop. And then she keeps making this weird
for 17 minutes
face, and he keeps laughing.
The in the script, I'm sure it says makes funny faces.
Right.
So she's making funny
faces.
So her
move is to make this really weird witch devil face, and Ryan Phillippe keeps looking over at her saying, stop it, that's distracting. And she's like, you're laughing. And he's like, no, I'm not laughing. And then he keeps laughing. But the laugh is super fake. The face is super weird. And in the end, they wind up like holding hands. So you're like, okay, so he just fake laughed at her dumb thing in order to get her to hold his hand. Got it. And then later you're like, wait, that's not what happened? Like, that was actually him finding her hilarious?
That's where he fell in love with her because, that's when he quote, fell in love later in the movie, she makes me laugh.
Yeah, that's exactly where I forgot about that. No, there's a scene the way later where he says the reason he loves her is she made him laugh.
She made me laugh.
And like you're like, she what? Did?
Yeah, that's what you thought was funny?
So strange.
Yeah, really weird. But here's the thing is that the movie understands the shape it ought to take, which is what makes it so fascinating to me, is that there's twists and turns and double crosses, and poor Ronald gets sucked into this sort of tryst with Sarah Michelle Gellar, and then Ryan Phillippe, for reasons we don't need to talk about, has to go seduce Selma Blair to spoil her, because Selma Blair is going off on a romantic getaway with Sarah Michelle Gellar's ex-boyfriend, and she wants to get at him, so she's using Selma Blair. Like, it's full of the things you'd want it to be full of, which is sexual double crosses and manipulations, but none of them make sense.
None of them are clever. And none are clever, none make sense, and none pay off. You never get the like reveal of all this stuff. Like you correct me if I'm wrong, you never really get any resolution on Sarah Michelle Gellar's ex-boyfriend thing.
No.
That never comes back or shows up.
Never does.
There's also this hideous subplot about a gay guy played by Joshua Jackson Pacey from Dawson's Creek.
Yeah, with bleached blonde hair because...
Bleached blonde hair. Because he's gay.
Yes.
And he talks a little, like a little gay, but in a straight guy doing a gay thing way. And he is...
I thought he was fine, actually.
Yeah. He was fine.
Yeah, that's
what I'm but he
the
was
character
still,
is very.
But he was still. He was. But you know, he still had all. I mean, he was dialing it. He wasn't like flamboyant or whatever. He was dialing down, but he still had all these fake gay mannerisms.
Yeah.
And so his thing briefly is that he wants to fuck this football player
who he's already been fucking.
And so tricks Ryan Phillippe sort of into thinking that, well, I don't, who cares? But it's all very offensive.
it's very offensive and very, very confusing. The idea is that Reese Witherspoon's only friend in New York is who's also from her town is this all-star quarterback guy. And Joshua Jackson knows he's gay because they've been sleeping together. But
no one else knows.
But no one else knows. It's going to ruin his social status because being gay would ruin him. And he keeps this quiet, and then Ryan Phillippe comes in at a planned moment to see them in bed together and takes a picture, and then uses the fact that he's gay to leverage him to do things for Ryan Phillippe against Reese Witherspoon. So
yeah, there's another level to that we're forgetting.
Well, the first part is that he thinks that Ryan Phillippe thinks the quarterback is the one who sent the letter.
Oh, right.
But
then that
turns out not to be true.
Right.
So then he
just decides to help Ryan Phillippe anyway because he doesn't want him to out him. And by the way, the signifier is for this guy being gay. There's a scene later on where he is throwing away his favorite music.
Yes.
Which is like
Barbra Streisand
and
Oklahoma.
And there was some other stuff that I noted in particular, Judy Garland.
Yeah.
And he's trying to clear his collection of gay music, which he just has. And then he like saves some because he can't bear to part with Judy.
Yeah, it's lazy.
It's lazy, and it's just. I think we've talked about this before, and I don't. I always say this, but maybe we do just have to deal with it. Is like 1999 feels so recent, yet this movie is loaded with F slurs and other gay euphemisms. And these just, I mean, it's horrible toward women too, but like in particular, this seemed very dated and weird to me.
Yeah.
Like
well, there's two things. There's the sexuality beats, And then let's get to the problematic misogyny, I think, after this. But
yeah,
there's two parts that feel really, really questionable. And I would say even mid-90s, like late 90s is kind of late to have these kind of jokes in movies, I feel like. But
I would have thought so, but I don't. I wonder if I'm just wrong. If like I'm rose-colored glasses.
Maybe. But there's these problematic sexuality jokes where the joke is clearly this guy's gay. That's funny. So the comedy laser is pointed at the fact that he's gay, not in use of something else.
Correct.
This next one is problematic, but it is the comedy laser is pointed in the right direction. I would argue at least, which is so. Ronald, who is an African American man, who the actor's probably 45 or something, he's very old, and Selma Blair, who's playing a mentally challenged young woman,
yeah.
And he's giving her cello lessons. Okay, fine. Starts to write her love letters, as we've discussed. So there's something wrong with a grown man seducing a mentally challenged younger woman. There's something inherently wrong about that.
Right.
And the mother finds out and is very upset because he's black. Is the joke. So
yes,
that's the joke.
She says that, but she
no, I mean the movie makes a huge, so Sarah Michelle Gellar goes, you need to know that he's doing this because it's really going to ruin her reputation at school because he's so, and then the mom goes, black.
Right.
He's so black.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
the movie's clearly telling us that that's what it wants us to think.
Sure.
Is.
Sure. Right.
So there's some problematic things there. At least it's pointed in the right direction.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean they and then they overplay that.
It goes on. That goes on for a while.
Here's what I really want to talk about, and this, if we're going to do, because I really think we should devote a lot of time to this, the misogyny of the film, which it's really, you know, I'm interested in a movie. I asked my sister this also before we started this show, if this was a movie, I was trying to get a context for it, and I was like, is this a film for girls? And she was like, yes, this is a movie that is intended and meant for and celebrated by female audiences, you know, roughly her age. She's 24 or 25, something like that. And so I was like, okay, cool. Got it. I got my context and I'm into it and I want to watch it. And we even Travis and I talked a lot about getting a female guest on here, which I wish we had because, you know, but scheduling. So I was watching it and I had that in mind, and therefore it took me a lot longer than I think it might have to realize that this is not true. This is at least if that is the audience, it is aiming for a certain kind of, you know, systemic self-loathing within that audience, because this is pure male point of view, the entire film. Mm-hmm. And it will trick you and pretend like it's got female point of view in it, but it certainly does not. And so the whole thing is a very elaborate and kind of multifaceted and twisted set of male fantasies and stereotypes being applied to women. And what's really interesting is that the movie, and the reason I brought up that first scene and why I really want to talk about the final scene, is the movie almost seems to be in conversation or argument with itself about whether its misogyny is right or wrong. Because there's, and what I mean is, okay, so you remember that first scene in the therapist's office where it's like, clearly this guy is brutal and sadistic toward women.
Mm-hmm.
There's a scene way later. And then the movie itself is full of all these female sexual stereotypes and fantasy tropes, including the dumb child girl, including the, like, you know, tight, rich, sexy girl who won't let you have her, like, including the girl next door. It's like they're just fantasy sexual tropes for women. But somewhere in the middle there, Sarah Michelle Gellar has this little speech, which is not particularly well written, but I was very intrigued and interested that they were dropping this, where she says, why does a woman who wants to have sex and assert her position, why is that seen as a slut? And how come a guy, you, Ryan Phillippe, who does the exact same thing, is treated like a hero? Basically, that's what the context of the speech is.
Mm-hmm.
So then, and I was like, oh yeah, like good job, movie, for like having something to say at any point in the entire film. Then in the end, the big, like, twist reveal, like, okay, so Ryan Phillippe has totally fallen in love completely with, and legitimately, with Reese Witherspoon.
Why? We don't know.
We don't know. He has. And then he gets in this inexplicable fight with Ronald, the black guy, which I wasn't even, like, watching close enough to know why they were fighting. I don't care.
Yeah.
And so they get in a fight on the expressway, and then they're, like, throwing these crazy punches at each other, and Reese Witherspoon sees that and runs up to stop them, and in the fray gets thrown into traffic. And she's lying there super dazed for this not big deal. Like, and she's lying there for a long time. Ryan Phillippe finally sees that she's lying in the middle of the road, runs out, pushes her out of the way, and gets hit by a car and dies.
But before although, he again, dies,
very in keeping with this movie's weird sense of context, you have no idea he's dead until much later. No.
Well, because they like keep him alive long enough where she runs over to him and he says, "I love you." And she says, "I love you too."
Like, it's a pretty bad car accident. Like, it's a pretty good stunt.
Yeah.
And then he's lying on the ground and she runs over and is like, "Are you okay?" And he goes, "I love you." And he's got a couple of scratches. So you're like, oh, fine.
They could have been from the fight, honestly.
Yeah, this guy's fine. Yeah. And then they pull back and then they slow dissolve to like
a picture of his
photo at like funeral style.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're like, wait, is he dead?
Yeah.
And then immediately, because you think this movie's on its shit, yeah, you're like, oh, cool. This is just going to be I faked my death thing.
100%.
And then it isn't.
Well, they set up the shot for it. They after this thing that Kalen's about to talk about happens,
yeah,
they cut to Reese Witherspoon driving Ryan Phillippe's car down the road. And it's not showing you who's in the passenger seat. And then she has a couple flashbacks to them holding hands and stuff. And I'm like, oh, this is it. He faked his own death to get away with this girl he loves. Because the movie has said the social pressure of school is what's keeping him being an asshole.
Right.
And so it pulls back to see that it's just his notebook on the passenger seat.
Yeah. It's really weird. It really makes me think, like, they must have fucked up the ending. Like, they must have had a different idea or shot a different thing, because there's no way
this is really weird.
But maybe it is because they're incompetent.
All right, so
anyway, I'm sorry, I got super derailed. So keep in mind that opening scene, that scene with Michelle Gellar, all the female stereotypes going on here. And then in the end, after this funeral thing, Sarah Michelle Gellar is going to go give a final speech that kind of summarizes, you know, what Ryan Phillippe meant to her and to everyone at the school. And she, I guess the intent is that she's going to be a little bit self-serving in this speech. And she's going to turn all the attention to her. So as she starts speaking, everyone in the church or wherever, the funeral place, starts getting up and leaving because something's going on outside. And again, you're thinking, oh, fucking Ryan Phillippe, he's not dead. He's out there. Like, he's doing something.
Mm-hmm.
And they're playing the Verve Bittersweet Symphony. And, like, everyone's getting up. And she's like, where are you going? I need to give my death speech. And then she goes outside. And what she finds is Selma Blair handing out copies of Ryan Phillippe's final journal that he's been keeping the whole movie, I guess.
Oh, I can talk about this for a second.
But the payoff is this journal tells the whole story. It's called Cruel Intentions, and it tells the story about making a bet for Reese Witherspoon and how he truly fell in love with her, and how, you know, Selma Blair is this like dumb kid, and how Sarah Michelle Gellar on her page is bitch, slut, you know, demonic,
cocaine
evil,
addict,
coke addict.
Yeah.
Like, he's just railing
bulimic
on her.
Which is...
Yeah, yeah, which they've hinted at earlier, sure, in it, weirdly. And so the final, basically the final shot of the film before it goes to this car scene with Reese Witherspoon is on Sarah Michelle Gellar's total humiliation and savage, you know, like, got her. And then her dad comes out and discovers that she's been hiding cocaine in her cross necklace, and she just gets annihilated. And I was like, this, it felt very much in the context of all those other things, it's not earned by the plot. You don't understand why you're supposed to hate Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Well,
at least I didn't.
There's one speech she gives us towards the end where she says, I only want to ruin you. I didn't care about any of this stuff. And clearly the character's saying it as a defensive posturing thing.
Right.
But she says, I only wanted to ruin you. I want to take the things you love from you. And
then
you're supposed to hate her.
I know that happened, but I didn't even clock it because I didn't believe for one second that that's how she actually felt.
No, of course not. But that's the signpost.
Does the movie believe that she really feels that way?
I don't know. I don't know. I legit don't know.
It doesn't. I would argue that there's no way you could draw the conclusion that that's how she really feels.
Well,
but
in this movie,
then in this ending, it's just you're supposed to feel like, yeah,
she got it.
Fuck you, you bitch, you dumb idiot. Like, you got what you deserve. And I was really confused about that based on her, what I perceived to be relatively sincere speech about sexuality and, you know, powerful aggression.
Yeah.
And so I was like, whoa, this movie finally resolves itself by saying, yeah, actually, we've made up our mind, and fuck those sluts.
Yeah.
And I was just like, what? Like, this movie's for girls? Like, this is the most fucked up thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's really not okay for kids and teen girls to watch this film. It's really, really not okay. The along the notebook thing, this is important, I think, just to track, because they set this up. Again, this movie is filled with 70,000 more little crosses and double crosses that we're not addressing because who cares. But just so you know, that it's filled with these attempts at cleverness and societal and people manipulation. So Ryan Phillippe keeps this journal of conquest. It's all the women he's fucked over the years, and it's his trophy. He calls it his fucking, like a serial killer, he calls it his trophy. And Sarah Michelle Gellar really wants to see it because she wants to know all the women he's bedded and what's going on with this guy and how does he do it and how is he so promiscuous and so virile. Right. And he's like, wouldn't you love to know? So it's this big right. thing. And it's this big notebook full of conquest. And then, you know, the girl he can't have is his sister, which is like he can't have. So she,
stepsister.
Her picture's all over it and she loves that. Anyway, so then he starts taking notes on the bet with Reese Witherspoon. And then I guess ostensibly, we never see this, but I guess he starts to write, well, I really actually fall in love with her. I wish I had made a bet to bed her. Classic plot, whatever. Yeah. Okay, so all that happens. That journal exists. And he goes in to tell Reese Witherspoon, in order to, I guess, save her or to save himself from the social problems he's going to have at school, by dating the headmaster's daughter, who's publicly a virgin, and he's a big womanizer. He goes in and he's like, I didn't really like you anyway, so let's break up. And she's like, what?
Yeah.
He's like, no, I don't. I just want to see what it's like.
And he's like shaking and weeping during this.
But also,
speech,
but also
so
not
funny.
Weeping. Like he turns away, and then they put tears on his face, and then he turns back around, and the camera picks him up.
Yeah.
Like he definitely was not crying. He's like weird glycerin tears on his glued to his face.
Yeah.
And he's not doing a good job of performing this, but she says stuff like, you're crying, you're shaking, and he's not, but fine. And so you get that it's supposed to be really hard for him. Again, a lot of this movie, if you picture the dialogue, you're like, I know what they're trying to do, I guess.
Yeah.
So all that happens, he leaves, he really thinks he's screwed up, and his big plan to get her back is to give her the journal explaining all of the terrible things he's done in his life, and her reaction is, this virginal, intelligent woman... Her reaction is to go, I really like this guy.
Yeah.
What if that was the craziest thing I've ever seen.
But once again, it is, but it's not the only possible context to place it in is the person making this film is essentially laying out their most simplistic, stupid, I mean, it seems like a very stupid person, sexual fantasies, which is that the key to the good girl's heart when you're ready is... Just tell her all the bad shit you've done, which has been so awesome up until right this second. And then she'll cave and feel and love you. And it's not, he's not even saying like, I feel bad about this.
No.
He's just like, here's what I did. And she's like, awesome.
Yeah.
Like, you are awesome.
You shared your deep secrets with me?
Yeah. He, and that's actually important. He never once regrets. And I don't need him to, but in the context of this film, it's very weird that he never feels bad about any of these horrible things.
Oh, not
he's
for
done.
1 second.
He's just like, I did him. And she's like, whoa, what a guy.
You. I love you too.
And not in awe, like just in a like, yeah, wow, you're the sweetest man I've ever met. Like, you told me this? Wow.
It is weird to see. It's very hard to extricate Ryan Phillippe's performance from the character because I can't tell what's good or bad about any of it.
Well, I was going to ask you that. Do you think, give me a sort of rundown of the performances for you.
Okay.
Just in terms of quality execution, you know.
For the movie, there's two categories. One is just performances because Ronald kills it, but he's in the wrong movie. I think Ronald gives the best performance if you care about acting stuff.
And is therefore the worst performer.
Yeah. So I would say that Ronald kills it. But in terms of the film, I think Sarah Michelle Gellar is the best. And I think Reese Witherspoon is also very good. And she does good work with some very confusing character motivation turns that make no sense. And she handles it. And she gives a very impassioned performance and she's sort of very emotional. I bought her.
Yeah.
I don't know what Ryan Phillippe is doing.
Hey Dallas.
Dallas is waving at everybody.
Oh, your shoes?
Yep.
Yeah.
He's got a nice little haircut.
And then Ryan Phillippe is completely...
I don't know what he's doing.
Yeah.
I really don't know what he's doing. And I...
So if you had to say he is good or he is bad...
I would say he's very, very bad. I really would. But I'm very open on this one to being like, no, that's part of the thing. I'd be like, I guess it could be. But to me, I kept imagining a movie where they had a charismatic, clever charming guy in this role who could turn it on, and you're like, oh, I get why women like this guy. I was every time a woman looked at Ryan Phillippe with some sort of admiration, lust, or interest, I was like, who are you seeing?
Yeah.
What are you
doing?
And
by the way, he is basically, if you want to take this back a decade, he's supposed to be James Spader.
Yeah.
He's just straight up James Spader in a slightly more 90s out context. And I mean slightly. Like, if you're looking to this movie to give you 90s, basically what you get is a soundtrack, which is The Verve, Blur, Counting Crows, which was my favorite scene in the whole film.
Yeah, that's the subway.
Yeah, and the sex scene. Uh-huh. Oh, it was great. And that, like, if there was any moment of pure pleasure for me, it was that there was a time when you could play the most fucking drivelly, sincere, soppy Counting Crows song, and it was totally cool.
I was actually surprised by that scene because of how deeply sincere it went.
Yeah, I know. I
couldn't believe
it.
I was like, because we've been in Snarktown the whole movie, and then all of a sudden it cuts to him. She's leaving town, and she's like, well, he doesn't love me, and I'm going to move away or whatever, or go stay somewhere else. And she's riding up the escalator, and Ryan Phillippe is at the top of the escalator, oddly, confusingly, sort of hunched over, looking sad. and Counting Crows is playing, and then then they make out in a way. And this is, I watched it with my friends Ben and Sarah, but we all had the same reaction to the way he kisses, which is like he's trying to lick the back of her head, like he's just eating her face at the top of the escalator. Then it cuts to them in bed in this utterly sincere
and this
scene.
Super, like, you know, glowing orange romantic light,
and they're sweaty, they have like someone's water bottled them before the shot.
Oh my god. And as he's having sex with her, he says to her, like, really quietly and sincerely, like, are you okay? And she's like, yeah. It's this movie is so strange because that scene, if it were being done with 1 degree different, it would be really funny and crazy. And it's not in this movie is so weird. You have to sort of readjust your entire calibration because you realize this guy, he's not going for jokes where you think he should. He's not going for the reveals you expect him to. And he's actually falling into the filmmaker, into this pit of soppy romance. When you think there's no way they could be doing that.
I still stand by what we said in the intro, which is there is a place. What's so frustrating about this film is there's a way to make it really good, which is, you know, these high school kids who they waver back and forth, and they really mean this when they say it, but then they change their mind and they're trying on these adult hats and trying to manipulate each other. That's so cool. And there's a movie there that could be really interesting.
I agree. I like the genre. I mean, I was being very sincere when I said I like the sexy high school genre. I think it's funny and cool.
And as long as the movie does what it tries to do.
Well,
this one fails at its own game.
Yes, but here's what I want to say. Like, what I haven't said all this time is, like, and this talks a little bit about, you know, when I was talking about how much I like Boondock Saints, or how I think Boondock Saints is awesome or doesn't suck. At the very least, does not suck. This movie sucks, but it's like really real trash, and it's real trash, and it's real trashy, and for all the things that are vile about it, I pretty much totally liked watching it. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's, I feel like that's important to report, which is like, yes, it does suck, but I'm not exactly laughing at it. It's not that joy. It's just, I like this kind of trash, and it's not that I'm into the sex fantasy stuff of it. I'm into the idea of somebody expressing dumb sex fantasy. But like,
you and I on this one agree 100%. I have no disagreement with that. I enjoyed watching it. The movie didn't bother me. I registered all the problematic stuff, and what really bugged me is that there's a much better movie.
Yeah,
with it just in the hands of a much more competent writer.
Well,
in my opinion,
frankly, that movie is Dangerous Liaisons. I mean, like, this exists. It's just a shame that they couldn't pull off this experiment with any skill to translate it to high school. But even as you look at this and you're like, well, this is a complete failure, there is something about the filmmaking and the performance style and the just insane, poor, trashy choices that's, like, pretty entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, take that with a huge grain of salt, because it's a really fucked up movie, and it says really fucked up, has really fucked up messages. You must be careful with who you share this with.
Yeah, do not go to someone and say this is your favorite film. It will not end well for you. Did you look up the plot of Cruel Intentions 2 and 3?
Oh, God, no. But I was stunned to see that this guy directed or wrote and directed Cruel Intentions 2.
Yeah, this is the thing he does. Cruel Intentions 2 is a prequel. With all different actors, where Sebastian comes to live with Sarah Michelle Gellar's character.
Right.
And they, all right. I've met my match and my stepsister.
Well, in a funny way, that sounds better to me.
It does. Not in a funny way. In a real way, it sounds better.
Yeah.
And then the third Cruel Intentions is just all new characters at a college in fucking...
Oh, they finally moved to college.
Yeah, they just fuck with each other. But different people.
Yeah, it's I know. But I mean, just like the genre, they've been like, well, let's stop kidding ourselves.
Saved by the Bell.
Let me ask you this. Do you think that Cruel Intentions 2 and or 3 has nudity, real nudity?
I would be so stunned if Cruel Intentions 3 did not have nudity.
Right.
I think I have to imagine, I would bet a lot of money it has nudity.
Really?
Yes. Cruel Intentions 2 could go either way. I don't know. But Cruel Intentions 3...
Okay, wait. I want to actually... Let's refine this, because I think we can make a bet. Okay. I think we should find out.
Okay.
Here... Let me specify, because I agree with you that it has nudity. Let me ask you this. Do you think it has any main cast nudity? Because I bet you what they do. Here's my bet. Cruel Intentions 3 feigns at being sexier by having sort of extras, you know, random super side players get naked.
I bet you this.
Okay.
I bet you of the three main characters in Cruel Intentions 3
that
one of them has nudity.
a female.
I would assume so.
Okay. So one of the two... I don't even know who the characters are in this movie.
I don't know. I just wanted to see if it was a continuation of the same story or not, and it's not.
Yeah.
The second one is, but...
All right. Well, I want to bet you $5.
Sounds good. Do we have to go watch it?
No, we just have to look it up. Ugh. We'll go to, like, Mr. Skin.
Oh, God. We're really broing up this whole podcast thing in a way that makes me deeply uncomfortable. All right. So, yeah, I think, you know, watch it if you want.
I think in this case it depends on what you remember and what you're trying to do by watching this movie. I mean, there's no real good reason that Travis and I should have ever watched this film. It doesn't have anything going for it, particularly. You can get better trash somewhere else. You can get better movies somewhere else. But... for having been forced by my own hand to watch it, I was like,
I would say if you want to teach your daughter about sexuality, this is a good way to bring her into it. Yeah. Yeah, like Selma Blair did.
Well, that about says it.
She was 27 in this movie.
If someone has cut together a montage of only Selma Blair scenes, I would 100% suggest you watch that.
You guys, it's not.
We've done crazy. Actually, I think that the biggest failing of this show right now has been not being able to represent what she's doing. I know we're just saying she's so weird and she's like doing this. You got to see it. You have to see it. It's really, really crazy.
She's playing at, I guess, a pretend child or something.
Yeah, and her age is confusing. It's just, and she does dances. Like, she'll do like crazy little dances that they linger on. Presumably because the director thought it was funny.
It's really, really weird. It's really not sexy. It's really gross and really confusing because she's playing at like being a child.
Yeah. All right, guys.
I have the answer to our question, looks like, I think.
Hit it.
Will you Google a look real quickly who the main actors are? Because I know
who does nudity in Cruel Intentions
3. Well, I just Googled it, and it says an actress breast scene in Cruel Intentions 3.
All right, let's see. How do I...
Just give me the cast of Cruel Intentions sequels, 3, top build.
Cruel Intentions 3.
Guys, bear with this. This is really important. Is the guitar music playing through all this?
Maybe. Starring Kerr Smith, Christina Annapau, Nathan Wetherington, Melissa Yvonne Lewis, Tom Parker.
Ooh, wait. Then in that case, we have to sidebar this, because the one person I have here is not listed there. So.
Well, then that's not the lead.
You may be right. But we'll have to go through and check it. So tune in next week to find out if there's nudity in Cruel Intentions 3.
That I won $5.
We'll see.
Next week, we will be viewing and discussing the motion picture entitled Beverly Hills Cop.
Oh, God. Thank God. Just thank God.
Great to hear.
Thank God. I needed something like that to like really come cleanse the palate. It's gonna be fun.
Let's hope, man.
I get you. That's why I hesitated. Nervous about Eddie Murphy,
But I'm excited to watch that movie.
I'm more nervous, to be honest with you, about Delirious and Raw than I am about this movie.
Right.
I think that's. I know for a fact those are a lot more problematic.
Yeah, sure.
So that'll be fine, I think.
Yeah, we haven't watched any Eddie Murphy, right?
We have seen no Eddie Murphy, actually. Fantastic. This is going to be it for
us. This is great. And what a way to introduce ourselves back to Eddie Murphy. It's right where it all began.
Oh,
well, not quite, but
right
close.
Back to this.
Join us next time when we watch it. Does Your Favorite Movie Suck?
Bye.